You know her from Fashion Police and covering red carpets and hilariously being the brunt of her legendary mother's jokes. The fabulous Melissa Rivers is joining us on the line to talk about her new book. Hello, Melissa.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Good to hear. Well, you know, I have to say, with Mother's Day just passing, I know how special your mom was to you. Tell me what Mother's Day is like for you now. You know, you have so many memories of her and her with Cooper. Do you celebrate? Do you mourn? How do you recognize the incredible woman that she was?
You know, you celebrate. It's been almost 8 years. So, you know, the last thing my mother would want is Cooper and I moping, you know?
Yeah.
That's just not who we are or who, you know, I want to say who we were, but you know, that's just not who we are. So, we don't mope. We're not mopers. We never have been.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the lesson, really, that people should learn in life, especially after this whole corona thing, is that you've got to find the positive. You've got to, you know, find things that make you happy, those memories that we cherish, that they're special to us, that nobody else will have
and
them.
And by the way, and that's exactly what any parent would want. You know, I don't know, are you a parent?
Yeah. Just to dogs.
Just the dogs. Okay. Well, I'm a parent.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want Cooper to be miserable and moping and never get past anything. And you want it to be wonderful memories and positive memories and all those good things. But, you know, you also want your child to be happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk, you know, the two of you paired up on red carpets was just, at least for me as a broadcaster, something that was just so iconic. And you hit the red carpets long before I did. I think for me it was about 2009. But I've heard you say in the past, and I totally agree, that the red carpet, it's just not the same anymore. And I think a big part of it is that you have to watch what you say. And you have to spare somebody's feelings. It's just too serious now. Just share your thoughts again with everybody about red carpets.
Absolutely. But that started to happen while we were still on the carpet, was everyone started to become very careful. And the original part with the red carpet was everybody was there having fun, and everybody was loose, and everybody was having a good time. And you know, even before the sort of what I was called the rise of the stylist, people were doing things and wearing things that they actually picked out and that they liked, which made all that much more fun. And, you know, then all the publicists eventually got very involved and were like, well, you said this about my clients, so now you can't talk to any of my other clients. And it just, the fun was lost. And everyone forgets that they're walking in to an amazing party. And you just, and nowadays for sure you're not allowed to have fun.
No, and I think that's a big part of it too, is that it's so much heavy talk about world issues. I mean, it loses that entertainment feeling. Absolutely, we want to know what Meryl Streep thinks about yada yada, suddenly it's become a sit down with Barbara Walters, and you're not standing on a carpet outside in Hollywood anymore. Like, just even the vibe has changed so much.
100%, 100%. It's not, and I do understand. Like, people want to support their causes and make their points and things like that. But we're not on the red carpet, you know, of the Nobel Awards.
Yeah. And I also noticed a change, though, when social media came into play. And, you know, the red carpet used to be for celebrities having their moment. And then suddenly, and this is with all due respect to my fellow broadcasters, I think when bloggers and YouTubers, non-journalists, came in, it was about selfies and the quote-unquote reporters wanting their moment. So the focus also shifted there. I mean, I would never have asked a celebrity for a photo on a red carpet back in the day. It just wasn't a thing that you did. So
oh, God.
Yeah.
And also, there's no more surprise when they get out of the car.
Yeah, that's
Everybody's already posting what they're wearing and getting ready and on our way. You don't have that moment anymore where people get out of the car and you go, wow, good or bad.
Absolutely. And see, that's the interesting thing about me covering them for radio. I really never talked about fashion with them because they, you know, people couldn't see it, right? You had the visual medium on TV. I was a little bit different, but yeah, I mean, just the whole vibe, the whole atmosphere, as you said, publicists all of a sudden are now, because you're going to have that viral moment that the celebrity does not want because they said something or they looked bad. And it's just a shame.
Or something being taken out of context, or, I mean, but it's everywhere now. It's not just on the red carpet, but it has, and the fun started going away, you know, before all this, but then it really took a turn where you're not allowed to say, what are you wearing? You're not allowed to be silly. You're not allowed to be light.
And let me ask you, because I know I wasn't going to bring up Fashion Police, but that was almost like a no holds barred kind of a show when it first started. I mean, that was the whole fun of watching it. And I think you were producing it. You were producing it towards the end then, right? Or how did it?
After my mom passed, I started hosting, and then we ran another 2 years, and then literally our last show was the one right before the one where everybody wore black, which, by the way, I think would have been one of the best Fashion Police episodes ever, because the women all looked original. Everybody was given a memo saying you have to wear black, mm-hmm. or you're supposed to wear black. And I thought it was one of the best ones ever, and the women looked amazing because everybody had to work hard at it. You had to go to the designer. You had to say, how do I make this look like me? How do I make this look like a great dress? How do I do this? It was like the greatest, you know, Project Runway challenge ever, and it was amazing. I was like, can we always have like a color code?
Yeah. Now, did you feel the pressure, though, from whether it was the network or even, I guess, publicists then, too? Because you have a quick turnaround when you're going from a red carpet Sunday to producing the show that was airing usually, you know, Monday.
Yeah.
What sort of influence or, you know, obviously there used to be standards and practices. I don't even know if that exists anymore. But, you know, you've got to run the jokes by people. What was it like towards the end of the show?
Before it all really took a major turn. I mean, we've been, like I said, the last Fashion Police we did was the one right before all of the women, you know,
yeah.
wearing black.
Right.
The network was wonderful with us in that we were given a lot of latitude. Every show, a couple times, jokes would get flagged. There's certain ones you fight for and certain ones you don't, but I have to say they really allowed us to be us. And it worked.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I mean, just even the chemistry that everybody had together, it was everybody worked off each other. It was just so great. Whether it was writing or whether it was natural, I mean, it was amazing to watch.
It was the combo platter.
Yeah. And we've all had countless discussions about the overly sensitive society and performers, you know, having to be apologetic for things now because, you know, somebody got their undies in a twist. And I remember in your mom's documentary, she's on stage and it was a cancer joke or some sort of an illness joke. And then the guy in the audience had a freak out and she stood up to the guy and said, look, you know what, get out of here then.
It was about death.
Right. Yeah. And so she's like, get out of here then. Get out of here. And, you know, we've had Margaret Cho on many times, and she's like, if you're coming to a comedy show, you're coming to laugh. So why go if you're just going to be offended? And so I don't even know if there's a question here.
No, it's the same idea. If you don't like it, change the channel. Now, do I think that there is something positive that has come out of all of this? Yes. There needs to be larger conversations. There needs to be more acceptance of people as who they are. But that does not mean... You know, we all know the difference between mean and funny. We all know the difference. Well, maybe not everyone, but you know what I'm saying? It's a lot like people need, you know, in one sense, yeah, there is a certain level of sensitivity that I think has become good, but the pendulum has swung so far, and hopefully it's going to start to right itself. You know, God, we're allowed to laugh. We're allowed to have fun. And no, you're not anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, let's take it one step further when we look at Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle. I mean, I couldn't imagine anyone coming up on stage and slapping or tackling Joan Rivers, or maybe Kathy Griffin, I could see that. But I mean, you know, you wouldn't do that to a comedian. You just wouldn't. Howie Mandel says he's afraid to take the stage and do stand-up again. I mean, that's a problem. That's a problem when you've got the performers.
It's a real problem, and I'm not sure it's as big... I'm not sure that it's going to be the major comedians, although I was already proven wrong with Dave Chappelle, because now everyone's very aware and they have security, which again is ridiculous. It's about the touring comics who don't have security, who, you know, are working the club circuit. They're the ones that are going to get really hurt. And, you know, unfortunately, Will Smith opened a Pandora's box and made that behavior okay. And you can say, I'm sorry, and I was wrong as many times as you want. People don't hear it. People don't want to hear it. People say, if he can do it, I can do it. And that's, I think, even is horrible. Because Will has come out and apologized and said what I did was wrong. But that's not going to stop people. It opened a door.
No, it's terrible. I mean, that was the great thing about celebrity back in the day was that, yes, your mom, super, super famous, but also one of the most approachable people you could have ever met. I mean, I couldn't imagine her coming with, you know, four bodyguards surrounding her when she's going into a venue. I mean, I just couldn't see that.
No, absolutely not.
No, and you know, it's just, I think we've just, is there any coming back to that time, though, I guess is the question.
Oh, God, your guess is as good as mine. You know, it's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. People are going to, you know, it's, you know, they talk, there's these great old stories about how back in the day when soaps were huge, when soap operas were huge, and people, because you were watching every day, would come up to the actors and actresses that were very often playing, like, the bad guys and yell at them. Like, they were the actual characters.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, now I think people think they can just go and do that to anyone they don't like who's an actor or an actress or a comedian or a performer or any of those things. It was one thing that people had, like, not, you know, had stalkers and things like that, but this has taken it to a new level.
Absolutely. You know, we have to talk about the book. I know they're already wrapping me up, but how would your mom have handled a situation of someone literally coming up on stage and getting in her face? What would she have done? She would have told them off with words, I'm sure.
I'm sure she would have told them off. I think she would have been very frightened.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it would have been very, very upsetting and disturbing, and she would have told someone to shut up and sit down.
Yeah.
But, you know, if someone actually gets physical, I think that would be terrifying. Especially for my mother, who, you know, was not, had no, you know, physically violent tendencies anywhere. I mean, the woman could barely throw a ball, let alone, she probably could have thrown a punch. I take that back.
In that moment, you know, you never know. But yeah, I mean, it's just sad. But you know, let's talk about happier moments. You do have the great book just remembering her life. What was the inspiration? Again, it's called Lies My Mother Told Me: Tall Tales from a Short Woman. The inspiration for this book about your mom.
Well, what people have to understand is it's not a memoir by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
It started out with my writing partner and I writing an article because everybody kept saying to me, what would your mother be saying? What would your mother be saying? Then we thought, well, that spun into us saying, ooh, let's rewrite the history of the world according to my mother. And then we hit a couple of roadblocks and writer blocks there. And we were like, well, what would be the natural thought after that? And it was all about these made-up versions of history as if my mother was telling it. And then we're like, what if it was just all crazy lies? And we literally just ran with the idea. There is not, you know, these stories are not true. My mother was not friends with the Pope.
Right.
You know? I've taken some liberties like it sprung from my imagination. But having a mother what's so funny is having a mother who is so out there and irreverent that people are reading this and going, oh my God, did she really say these things? I'm like, no! she did not use, you know, she did not say that, you know, the serpent in the Garden of Eden had a lisp because he wouldn't wear his retainer.
But I mean, that's got to be fun to take that sort of creative writing to a new level, right? I mean, you're essentially writing as your mom coming up with these kinds of stories, basically.
Yes, and like I said, it's a bit worrisome that people believe some of them.
I mean, is it worrisome to you, though, that you're able to do that, I guess, is the bigger question, too.
No, because remember, we were performing partners. We were a comedy team for so many years that, you know, we both know and knew each other's rhythms and cadences and knew where the other person was going. And I just was like, what would be the most outrageous things? And my writing partner and I, who knew my mother very, very well and actually had written, had been her writing partner on her last couple books, and someone I knew for years, and then he sort of transitioned into being my writing partner, which is very funny because we'd be fighting over who was working with Larry. I was always like, you are so in the middle of a relationship right now, you have no idea. It's like a love triangle. And it just, it was such fun. It was such fun, and we wrote it during COVID, and it made us both laugh.
I feel that there will all, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel there will always be new stories for you to tell about her. Like, these stories are going to live on longer than all of us. Am I right on that? Like, we haven't heard the last of Joan Rivers is how I feel.
Well, I haven't, everyone's like, don't you want to write a memoir? I'm like, not yet. And not, you know, it's not where I am in my head nor in my life. So, of course, there's other stories. You know, you go back to Book of Joan, which I read after she passed, and there were great stories. And, yeah, I don't think I'll ever be at a loss.
You or the rest of us, because, again, like I said, I mean, I can watch her documentary in the bathtub and just still eyes watering, laughing so hard that it's just some of the... It's timeless. It's iconic. It's just... It's a take back to where we need to be again, where we can just... escape where we are and have a laugh.
I hope so. You know, and fingers crossed the ship will right itself. But, you know, everyone says, what would she say? I'm like, she'd be really upset and really distressed. And people always say to me, how would she be dealing with this in her act? And it hit me the other day. Oh my God. She would just be saying, oh, because of political correctness, I can't do this joke, this joke, this joke, this joke. You know, and work it in that way and still be able to do her material.
You know, we do have to go. But one final question, since you bring that up, does it get tiresome having people ask you what would Joan say or no?
No, it doesn't. I hesitate because, you know, people always say, do you hear her? And I'm like, way too much. Way too much. I don't need her chattering in my ear all the time. Yeah, you know, what would she say? She would say, this is all insane.
And I guess sometimes, you know, the fact that you have that kind of a response, that you can sort of laugh and go, I know what her response will be, and that makes me laugh, sometimes that just fills your heart, doesn't it?
Yes, and sometimes when she's telling me that she doesn't like my hair, or that I'm making some sort of poor decision, I get that chatter too. I'm like, shut up.
But you know what? It's a good nightmare to have. I will take that one. I would take it.
Thank you. Yes. You know, and I keep saying to Cooper, are you hearing it? Because if you're not, you're going to hear me, and that's going to be worse.
you and your mom are going to tag team. That's what's going to happen to him. The poor guy. Oh, poor kid. Jeez.
That poor child. Well, the dedication in my new book is to Cooper, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we've teased it enough. So, again, the book is called Lies My Mother Told Me, Tall Tales from a Short Woman. Melissa Rivers, thank you again so much. It's always great chatting with you.
Thank you so much.